You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Skylar Butenchen.
I'm Katie Frankowitz. Rogue Brewery abruptly ceased operations at all of its facilities Friday morning. The company operates pubs in Astoria, Newport, Portland, and Salem. In Newport, Rogue Brewery maintains a large production brewery on land it leases from the Port of Newport. The Lincoln Chronicle reports that Rogue owes the port over $500,000 in rent and owes Lincoln County $30,000 in taxes. Rogue Brewery has not made any statements about the closures. In Astoria, one of the company's pubs has been an anchor tenant at the foot of Pier 39 for 19 years. Pier 39 owner Floyd Holcomb says Rogue also owes him money. He says the company missed its first rent payment this week, but declined to provide further details. He says the sudden closure was a shock. Holcomb says he'll be evaluating next steps in the coming days, but he isn't worried about finding a new tenant for the space Rogue currently occupies. I'm Katie Frankowitz, reporting for KMUN.
The Astoria City Council's Ward 4 seat is now vacant after Vance Lump, who was elected to the seat last year, resigned earlier this month. Five people have applied to fill the Ward 4 position, which represents Astoria's Uppertown area. Joshua Conklin is an inventory auditor at Costco Wholesale and a graduate of Astoria High School. He says he would aim to create a more inclusive and transparent community. Lisa Morley is a retired safety consultant for behavioral science technology. She ran against Lump for the seat in 2024 and lost by only 48 votes. Morley says she is running again because she cares about Astoria's heritage and its future. Michael Brocious is on the boards of Columbia Memorial Hospital, the Liberty Theater, and the Clatsop County Historical Museum. He says he is running to tackle the many issues Astoria is dealing with, including houselessness and a lack of workforce housing. Cindy Bell, a member of the Astoria Lions Club, says she is looking forward to working with everyone at the city and appreciates the opportunity to serve the community. And Colin Cummings is an Army veteran and supply chain manager at Fort George Brewery. He says he is running because the city's high cost of living needs to be addressed. A town hall meeting introducing all five applicants will be held this Wednesday, November 19th at 5:30 p.m. at Peace First Lutheran Church. The Astoria City Council will formally interview the applicants on December 1st. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. The Garibaldi Fire Department has welcomed its new fire chief, Randolph Peterson. Born and raised in Napa, Oregon, Peterson joined the Napa Fire District as a volunteer when he was just 18, and later became an assistant chief there. He spent 20 years working with Medics Ambulance Service and most recently served as a division chief for Columbia River Fire and Rescue in St. Helens. Peterson says he's looking forward to helping the Garibaldi Fire Department bounce back from a rough patch. Earlier this year, former chief Jay Marig resigned in protest over the department's budget. Several longtime Garibaldi volunteers resigned alongside Marig, so Peterson says his focus will be on training up the current volunteers while actively recruiting new ones. And Peterson says he would like to increase the variety of medical calls that the department can respond to. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. The California National Guard members who were sent to Oregon by President Trump will soon be back home. OPB's Ryan Haas reports.
A military official who spoke to OPB on condition of anonymity said all 200 members of the California National Guard who came to Oregon in October would be returning home soon. California Governor Gavin Newsom's office confirmed the soldiers' return and said they never should have been sent to Oregon. Trump deployed the troops after conservative media outlets portrayed nightly protests outside a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in Portland as chaotic. Since then, the Trump administration has been in a protracted legal fight over the troops. On November 7th, a federal court issued a permanent injunction against the administration. The White House intends to appeal that ruling. I'm Ryan Hast reporting.
Oregon lawmakers are back in Salem this week. Legislators will talk about how the state should adjust for funding changes made through President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill. OPB's Bryce Dole reports.
One of the president's main goals is to shrink federal spending. The passage of Trump's domestic policy bill cut funding for social safety net programs while enacting his promised tax cuts. The bill aims to force state and local governments to pick up the tab. In Oregon, state leaders say that's created a nearly $900 million funding hole. Oregon House Speaker Julie Fahey, a Democrat, accused the Trump administration of, quote, wreaking havoc on Oregonians' pocketbooks. Republicans say these changes are long overdue. State leaders are heading to Oregon's capital, where they will present options to legislative committees on how agencies might respond to budget cuts. Lawmakers will decide during the short session early next year how the state will backfill for the loss in federal funds. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
The boss of the Oregon Department of Transportation is stepping down. His departure comes as the agency faces scrutiny for its financial management of some of the state's largest transportation projects. Here's OPB's Bryce Dole once more.
Director Chris Strickler spent the past year lobbying for a bill to fill a financial gap at ODOT. The bill passed in September. Leaders hope its new taxes and fees will prevent mass layoffs and fund Oregon's roads. Strickler also spent that time under fire for how ODOT has managed increasingly expensive projects like the Rose Corridor. The effort seeks to widen Interstate 5, but recently lost critical grant funding. The Oregon Transportation Commission is now weighing whether the state should continue funding the project, but Commissioner Lee Beyer says the Oregon legislature will have the final word.
My personal opinion is it's a great development project. I don't know where we're going to get the money to do it.
Beyer praised Strickler as one of the best directors he has worked with. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
The number of Oregonians who have been charged with a crime and don't have an attorney is decreasing. Lauren Dake reports.
Oregon has struggled for years to meet a basic constitutional requirement. If you've been accused of a crime but cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. But the new head of the Oregon Public Defense Commission said the state is making progress. As of this week, there were 2,835 people waiting for an attorney. That is compared to more than 4,000 in May. Some public defenders say it still feels like a crisis, however, in courtrooms and communities across the state. The nonprofit Public Defenders of Marion County is suing the Oregon Public Defense Commission, arguing its contract has quotas that are impossible for public defenders to meet. I'm Lauren Dake reporting.
The Portland City Council rejected a plan last week to cut millions from a program that removes homeless camps from public property. Councilors considered a proposal to take $4 million from this program and put it toward funding rent support, food assistance, and other services. It failed after 7 hours of heated debate among councilors and the public over how to address the city's homelessness crisis. The debate centered on Mayor Keith Wilson's homelessness strategy, which relies on campsite removals. Councilor Tiffany Koyama Lane urged Wilson to take the discussion to heart.
Mr. Mayor, I'm asking that you do hear this as a plea for partnership to bring councilors up here, community groups, and the public more fully into your decision-making process for supporting our unhoused community members.
Portland just started enforcing a public camping ban this month. Since November 1st, the city has issued 9 citations to people who violated that rule.
The Oregon Attorney General is warning Coos Bay residents about a spike in theft from electronic benefit transfer cards. 41 residents have reported their federal SNAP benefits were stolen and spent in other states. Investigators say the money was stolen using skimming devices installed on a card reader or point-of-sale machine that capture card data. Anyone with an EBT card is encouraged to keep their PIN private and monitor their account. If the card has been compromised, you should file a police report. SNAP funding was recently restored to Oregon recipients after benefits were delayed because of the federal government shutdown.
the University of Oregon contributes more to Oregon's economy than any other public university in the state. That's according to estimates in a new report released by the university last week. Last year, U of O generated $3.7 billion in economic output. Tina Goldberg helped lead U of O's economic development efforts. She says the university produced nearly $240 million in state and local tax revenue.
That comes from our operations, our whole supply chain of spending, and that's direct revenue for the state that then can be used for healthcare, transportation, and other important infrastructure in state.
According to a report earlier this year, Oregon State University is roughly $200 million behind U of O in total financial contributions to the state. The difference is largely because U of O's sports program makes more money. A similar report from Portland State University released last year found the Urban University added $1.8 billion to Oregon's economy. This is KMUN. The Skamania County Sheriff's Office announced last week they would stop using Flock safety cameras. Flock cameras read and record license plates. They've been scrutinized lately because their data is stored on the privately owned company's servers. Skamania County Sheriff Summer Shire says some residents were worried about the data being used for unreasonable searches.
At this point, I'm just done with the cameras. It's been tumultuous, to say the least.
Her concerns relate to a Washington state court decision earlier this month that made the data collected by Flock cameras a public record. And in Oregon on Thursday, immigration advocacy groups celebrated the city of Woodburn for turning off its Flock cameras over worries that they could be used to assist with immigration arrests.
Washington health officials announced last week that initial tests show a Grays Harbor resident has avian flu. According to the state's health department, additional testing is being conducted to verify the diagnosis. If confirmed, this would be the first human case of bird flu identified in Washington this year. Currently, the Grays Harbor resident is being treated at a King County hospital. The state's chief science officer, Tao Sheng Quan-Get, says people should avoid coming into contact with sick or dead birds.
We are conducting an investigation to determine the potential sources of the infection. For avian influenza, common risk factors include contact with ill, wild, or domestic birds or other animals. Fortunately, the risk to the public is low.
Officials are recommending people get their normal flu shot. This vaccine won't prevent bird flu, but could help prevent a co-infection. According to the state health department, human-to-human transmission of bird flu is very rare and has never been documented in the U.S. This is KMUN. If you've ever dreamed of owning your own farmstead, you're far from alone. NWPB's Rachel Sun finds out what farm life is really like and the unique way one farmer is connecting with animal lovers.
The day starts around 6 in the morning at Sage and Willow Farm, just outside of Poulsbo, Washington. I'm following its owner, 51-year-old Ronnie Ryan. She's headed out through the pasture gates behind her house to tend to her animals. Dozens of hungry sheep, goats, and turkeys are waiting.
Turkles! Do you guys want your breakfast or not? Do you bounce it or not? Not a very clear answer.
Here on her five-acre farm, she releases hordes of the animals from their enclosures and starts doling out breakfast. She fills buckets with grain and feeders with hay. She milks goats and greets animals by name.
Didi, do you want to go in here? Didi, you have to get breakfast. Didi.
Once the animals' breakfast is over, Ryan circles back for her own. That includes a smoothie with milk she collected just a few minutes before. Ryan first started farming over a decade ago when a friend asked her for help with his small farm.
He's like, okay, we're going to plant these lettuce. And I'm like, I can't even see this little thing. It's so little. You're telling me this is going to grow food? He's like, yeah, and a lot of food. And then it's going to make a million more of those seeds when it's done. And I just thought, that is so rad.
But that work is getting harder. According to a report by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, between half and 85% of small family farms in America are considered to have high-risk profit margins. At Sage and Willow, Ryan says it's been too overwhelming to keep up with growing and selling vegetables as a one-woman show. Instead, she's tried to keep the farm going by selling meat, dairy goats, and something more unique.
What percentage of your business centers around the goats and the goat yoga these days, would you say?
Well, I'd say it's almost 100%. I do have farm tours, but not a whole lot.
Ryan started goat yoga in 2019 as a way to socialize the animals. But for several years, it's also been a major source of income. She also offers goat cuddle sessions. Ryan runs three of those goat yoga sessions on Saturdays. We head back to the barn after breakfast, and over the course of the next hour, Ryan leads a group through cat-cows, downward dogs, and bridges while baby goats climb on top of them. One starts nibbling on a pant leg.
Just curl those toes under, push that bent leg back to meet the other in plank. If it doesn't feel good, drop the knees, you're gone there anyway.
It's not the most focused yoga class, but as one attendee puts it,
I like animals more than people, and I like people a lot, so just saying, I love them, and I want to take them all home.
After yoga, Ryan heads back to the house. She grabs something to eat and allows herself a cigarette while we talk. She'll have a few hours before she starts the evening chores. Ryan says for now she's working to close out this season of goat yoga. She's not sure what next year will bring or if she'll be offering classes, but she knows she wants this life to be more accessible than it is.
The number one thing that I hear people say to me all the time is, you know, you're living my dream. And I tell them, it is a good dream. It is a very good dream.
In Poulsbo, Washington, I'm Rachel Sun.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org.
That's all from us today. We'll see you tomorrow.